Roxanne Bly. Roxanne Bly has more than 10 years of experience in community-based strategic planning, program development, and implementation. A member of the Pueblo of Laguna, she has extensive experience in outreach, education, and advocacy related to the Indian health system and impacts of health care reform on Native consumers. She's the interim chief executive officer for Native American Professional Parent Resources, one of the two navigator entities for New Mexico Health Insurance Exchange. And today she's going to be talking with us about the Affordable Care Act and American Indians creating a culture of coverage in New Mexico. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Brooks. Good afternoon, everyone. So I am going to share with you the outcomes from a project that we did in New Mexico to ensure that Native Americans could benefit from all of the elements of the Affordable Care Act. And before I get started, I have no relationships to disclose. Many people don't realize that in exchange for millions of acres of land that my ancestors traded to the federal government, we have a very unique relationship with the U.S. government as Indian people. We call it the Federal Trust Obligation. If you ever have a chance to see or hear Dr. Donald Warren speak, he describes it as the first prepaid health insurance plan. So we're one of the only populations in the United States that's actually entitled to receive health care at no cost from the federal government. And because of this relationship, the law treats us very differently. So there are specific elements of the Affordable Care Act that only apply to Indian people. One of them is we are exempt from the requirement to have coverage. So the government cannot penalize us if we fail to acquire health coverage now with the Affordable Care Act in place. One of the most exciting elements is the cost-sharing exemption. So if you're a member of a federally recognized tribe, and I'll use a family of four as an example, if your income is under 300% of the federal poverty level, so for this open enrollment period, that would be $71,550. If your income falls below that level, you pay nothing out of pocket. There's no copays, there's no deductibles, there's no coinsurance. And those of you that are familiar with the marketplace, you may be aware some of the very inexpensive plans, the bronze plans, typically have a deductible of about $6,000 for an individual. So what this means is that Indian people can get very low-cost coverage through the marketplace. We have helped people apply for plans for as little as 32 cents a month, and that's nothing out of pocket. So truly amazing. And regardless of income, if you're using the Indian health system, you can still benefit from a limited cost-sharing exemption and not pay out of pocket. So huge opportunities for Native people through this law. I describe it as an unprecedented opportunity to strengthen our Indian health system. I started this work many years ago, and one of the reasons I got involved in it is when the Indian Health Service is only funded about 54% of the actual need. And so if you need services outside of that system, there's no guarantee that the Indian Health Service will pay for it. And so a very common example is mammography. So the health clinic that I go to in Albuquerque does not offer mammography. You actually have to get a referral and go out of the system for that. And there is no guarantee that that will be paid for. And typically, two-thirds of those claims or those requests for additional services are denied. And so prior to this law being passed, we actually had community members who were denied cataract surgery, were unable to get rehab services after having a stroke. And in some instances, it took so long to actually get the diagnostic tests needed that people would actually pass away because by that point their illness had been so advanced. So I can't overstate this. Many of us have worked on this for years. It truly is, for some of us, the first opportunity for the federal government to fulfill some of the broken promises it's made to our people. So a number of options through the Affordable Care Act, many incentives for tribes to build and develop their own health systems. They can maximize limited resources. A lot of folks don't realize this, but Medicaid is treated very differently when the Medicaid enrollee or beneficiary is American Indian and they're receiving services in a tribal setting or an Indian health service setting. The reimbursement rate is significantly higher. It's an all-inclusive rate that's set by the Office of Management and Budget. And to give you an example, a typical primary care visit might be reimbursed at $90, but if it's in a tribal setting or IHS setting, it will be reimbursed by Medicaid at a rate closer to $330. So the possibility for maximizing limited resources and generating revenue is huge. In addition to that, states don't have to put in matching dollars for these Medicaid resources. So the Affordable Care Act has a huge opportunity to cover as many Indian people as possible, and through this generation of third-party revenue, truly transform our Indian health system. And I like to tell people, I'm from the Pueblo of Laguna, we operate a large casino, and I like to tell people, right now we're known for our casinos, but in another 10 years we'll be known for our health systems. And where this has huge impacts for the non-Indian population, one of the concerns that people have about the Affordable Care Act, as more people get coverage, where are they going to go? Because having coverage doesn't necessarily mean access. And we believe that through this process, many Indian health providers might be able to fill some of those gaps, because we will be able to generate the revenue necessary to attract providers to serve underserved communities. But how do we make this happen? How do we make this dream come true? And we recognized early on that it was a lot more complicated than just getting out there and telling people about the new law and letting them know about coverage options. We actually have to create a shift in attitudes and behaviors. We call it creating a culture of coverage. Just a little bit of background about New Mexico. We were very lucky. We have 22 sovereign nations in New Mexico. They have a unique relationship with the state, and so when the state designed the marketplace, there were elements in the enacting legislation that recognized that relationship with the tribes, and so there was a strong foundation to build from. But despite that relationship, our environment is very complex politically. Our administration is Republican. We were one of the only Republican states to expand Medicaid and opt for a state-based exchange, but it wasn't ready in time. And so we actually have a hybrid. So the state performs the small business functions, and we rely on the federal system for individual enrollment. It was very difficult to secure equitable funding for this program. I think Dr. Andrulis mentioned that it's really important that these revenue streams are distributed equitably to ensure underserved populations benefit. It was very difficult to negotiate a contract with the exchange to create this program, but we were successful. We were able to get $1.3 million for about 9 months of funding. It isn't a grant. It's actually a performance-based contract, and there is a financial consequence if you fail to meet the deliverables. There is a perception in our state that Native programs can't be successful, that they have challenges meeting ambitious goals or objectives or delivering on ambitious programs. And so there was sort of this perception, you all can't do it. We've never seen these programs be successful before. And why would Indian people sign up? They have the Indian Health Service. And so we took that as a call to action, a challenge that we considered failure was not an option. We had to make this program work. So in short, our goal was to reach out to 9,200 individuals. That was in a 9-month period, and enroll 2,660 people in a qualified health plan through the exchange. We were funded to train and certify 30 in-person assisters, we called them guides at the time, and then also to set up a certified application counselor program of about 10 people. We had no time from the time our contract was signed and we went live on October 1st. There was very little time to design a robust program and develop tools and measures. So we did a very simplified logic model, and we theorized that if Native people became aware of the options available to them, we increased their understanding about health insurance, they would recognize the benefits, and that would result in a change in attitude and behaviors around coverage, and more people would sign up. We also adapted an approach, some of you I'm sure have heard of this, results-based accountability. It's a very simple approach to developing performance measures. And so we measured three things. It boils it down into a very accessible way of looking at performance and monitoring it over a period of time. We looked at how much are we doing, how well are we doing it, and is it making a difference? Is anyone better off? And these are the questions we asked. We developed a web-based tool using SurveyMonkey to track this information. And what was really effective is it was easily understood and easily embraced by multiple stakeholders. So tribal leaders could understand it and embrace it. The board of directors for the exchange and the legislature were able to understand these measures and what they could mean. This was really helpful because the data was collected in nearly real time. We were able to quickly recalibrate. When something wasn't working, we could recognize that quickly, refine and change, and when things were working well, we were able to replicate them easily. So you'll notice some similarities to the report card that my colleague shared earlier, the number of people who enroll in health coverage, the number who receive one-on-one education, and this was critically important, the number of people who report they receive the information in a culturally appropriate manner. For some of us have traditional ideas around health coverage, and there's cultural taboos related to that. So for example, for a non-Native person, it would be appropriate to say, hey, you need health coverage, something could happen to you, and you want to be protected. That is a very poor message for most Native people, because that suggests that something bad will happen to you. And you really have to find that fine line of making sure people understand the need to be prepared and to protect themselves and their families in a very reassuring manner. So our outreach and enrollment strategies, we did use the hub and spoke model that Ms. Siddiqui mentioned in her presentation. So we are one of two navigator entities, and we subcontract with a large number of Indian tribes, pueblos, nations, and Native organizations around the state. The first phase of our project, which ended on June 30th, did not include the Navajo Nation because at that time the state did expect them to set up their own program. But we were able to subcontract with tribes around the state and set up outreach, education, and enrollment programs in nearly every tribal community. I can't overstate the challenge related to this. If anyone has worked with sovereign nations, it takes months, even years, to build those types of relationships. And I felt very grateful that I had worked on these issues for a number of years and had relationships that we were able to build on and expand. Nearly all of our in-person assisters are fluent in the native languages spoken by New Mexico tribes. So Navajo, Tewa, Tiwa, Towa, Karis, Zuni, and the Athabascan languages. And imagine describing this complicated process. Imagine getting from, hello, do you have health coverage, to here's the plans that are available, take a look at these different benefits, entirely in Navajo. Because as the other presenters have pointed out, there are no direct translations for some of this information. There's no cultural context for it. In some ways, it's meaningless, and the interaction is quite lengthy. So you can see this is a map of our state. We now have 40 sites, including the Navajo Nation. We used a number of key operational strategies that led to our success. One of them was our staffing model. So we recognized very early on that it would take multiple encounters to encourage individuals to sign up for coverage. It wasn't going to be a single interaction. So we allowed for 3 hours of outreach and education and then 2 hours for the enrollment process. So we were very adequately staffed, and the emphasis was on the outreach and education, knowing that would lead to the behavior shift. We maximized technology through our web-based systems. We set up a separate toll-free call line for Native American consumers, and we leveraged every call that came in. Every inquiry call was leveraged to create a seamless consumer experience. pick up the phone, ask a question, and guide that person into an appointment. Because once we get them in for an appointment, it's highly unlikely they're going to leave without health coverage. So that call process is enormously important. As others have pointed out, the federal training simply isn't enough. We hosted biweekly webinars, monthly in-person training events, and then we also set up a technical assistance and support website. And some of our in-person training activities, we partnered with a broker and did a training, Getting to Yes. How do you use inquiry and how do you remove barriers for the consumer so they understand the benefit of getting insurance without a hard sell? We also learned motivational interviewing techniques to help clients recognize what their own barriers might be to accepting or adopting a change. Maximize Earned Media. One of the things that was unfortunate about New Mexico, although they invested in a marketing strategy, it wasn't all that effective, so we had to do quite a bit of that work ourselves. Some of the challenges, the contracting pilot process, developing the relationships that were necessary, the training was minimal. We had to do quite a bit to ramp up that training and ensure that our in-person assisters were skilled and able to deal with the complex situations that would come up, obviously the issues with the federal website, and then the information transfer. It should be an electronic no wrong door. So if you encounter a client and they're eligible for Medicaid, that should be sort of one-stop shopping where they apply and then they're automatically transferred to the program where they're most likely to be accepted. And with the Medicaid piece, that was broken, so we had to train our in-person assisters to be able to do both Medicaid and the healthcare.gov system, which was a challenge. We came up with some pretty innovative strategies, and some of the most successful were house-to-house. So I hope some of you have a chance to visit New Mexico. We have 19 pueblos, and they're small, rather insulated villages where people live very close together. And one of the most effective techniques was to actually go house to house to visit families. Our tribal leaders have a lot of influence in our lives. They're political leaders, they're spiritual leaders, and many of them describe themselves as our fathers. They're looking out for their people, they're looking out for the community. So one of the most effective strategies was to have our pueblo governors direct their people, direct their members to visit with an in-person assister and make an appointment. So officials would go house to house and encourage people to sign up. We had an outreach specialist that rode city buses. Outreach specialists stationed themselves at laundromats and Walmarts in urban areas where we knew there were a large number of Native families. And then another successful strategy was an area-wide MOA with the Indian Health Service, which allowed us to actually co-locate in-person assisters in IHS facilities and service units. And this is an outreach event at Gathering of Nations. I think it's the North America's largest powwow. This was quite popular. But interestingly, these booths do not work well. They're eye-catching, and you get quite a bit of earned media out of them. But booths, we found, were not effective outreach tools. This is a photograph of, I call him our outreach guru, our outreach Yoda, Sonny Wiyaki. He trains all of the outreach specialists replicating get out the vote technique. So there's a lot of emphasis on developing a rap or elevator speech and messaging. And a lot of the work is done right out on the street interacting one-on-one. Again, the reporting process was using SurveyMonkey, very easy to use. The in-person assisters and outreach folks could actually update their tracking using a cell phone or other mobile device, and we were able to create standardized reports for stakeholders literally in real time. So, for example, using this system, I was able to tell the exchange how many outreach encounters were accomplished through that large powwow event and how many resulted in appointments. And the ability to be able to do that really set us apart. And so how did we do? How did it end up? As of June 30th, so this was the first 9 months of our program, outreach to over 30,000 individuals, one-on-one education for nearly 15,000, and over 4,000 signed up. And these numbers, thank you, Dr. Brooks, these numbers might seem small, but I really have to remind you of what I said earlier. This population has no compelling reason to sign up. No penalty, and the federal government is actually obligated to provide them health care. So we're very, very pleased with the results. We're still refining our messaging, and one of the things we've noticed through our research, this is interesting, women are the key decision makers for the families, but men are most likely to decline. So if you have a family in your office and you're working with them, the mom is going to make the decision, but if they don't sign up, it's more likely to be because of dad. So we're working to refine the messages so that we can affirm these traditional roles in Indian families, so make it easy for mom, recognize her responsibility, and then encourage dad to recognize his traditional role in the family to prepare and protect. So an example is, just like you wouldn't go into winter without chopping a cord of wood and having it stored by your house, you don't want to have your family out there without insurance, and that's been very effective. And so what was the impact? We signed folks up, and we're already seeing the impact of that increased number of Indian people with health coverage. Many of our service units are now approving cataract surgery for the first time in years. Our program outperformed. Our in-person assisters helped an average of 19 people sign up for a qualified health plan compared to the other navigator entity that signed up an average of 8. Our program was expanded across the state. We received an additional $2.3 million. The strategies were so successful, they were replicated by the exchange to use in the non-Indian communities with non-Indian clients. And then finally, it established our organization and our partners truly as credible leaders and experts. So we completely dispelled that myth, hey, these Indian programs don't work, they don't know how to do this stuff. We really hit it out of the park. So very, very exciting on nearly every level. And we did develop quite a few of our own marketing materials. This is a little cartoon. A cartoonist from Santo Domingo Pueblo, let's get you covered. His little gown isn't quite adequate to cover him up. And Indian humor, this was really resonated with folks, so we used this for postcards. And if you ever want to contact me, please reach out. My information is right here. And I'm at Napper, and then I also have a small consulting company, Bly & Associates. I know this is inappropriate, but I have to thank my mother and my husband who have made my work possible. Thank you.